Imagine looking at an observational data set from, a major firm, and you see that employees who work from home are like 39% more productive than those in the office.
Right. And looking at those numbers, you would probably advise the firm to close their physical offices tomorrow. I mean, it seems obvious.
Exactly. But what if I told you that massive 39% bump was, well, a complete mathematical illusion,
Yeah.
just driven entirely by confounding?
You would be looking at a classic trap in empirical microeconomics. We are constantly handed observational data where the underlying data generating process, or the DGP, is totally obscured.
Yeah, we just see a positive margin, right? A
Yeah.
difference in means. And the immediate temptation is to interpret that association as a causal effect.
It's so tempting. Which brings us to the core mission of this deep dive. For you, the graduate student in economics looking to formalize your methodological approach, we are unpacking a rigorous study guide today.
Right, and we're basing this on Carlos Mendez's tutorial on causal inference using the Douai library in Python. We are going to totally deconstruct that exact work from home scenario.
The real elegance of Mendez's tutorial is that he uses a simulated observational study. Because it's a simulation, we are omniscient.
Yeah, we know the actual rules of the universe for this specific data set. And the true average treatment effect, the ATE, of working from home on productivity is strictly 1.0.
Exactly 1.0, a flat single unit of productivity increase, nothing more.
Yet when you run the baseline numbers and calculate the naive difference in means between the remote group and the office group, the estimate yields 1.39.
So there's our 39% upward bias. And that bias stems from two specific covariates skewing the data. They open these backdoor paths that contaminate our naive comparison.
Okay, let's unpack this. What are those covariates?
Well, first we have introversion. An introverted employee obviously has a higher probability of self-selecting into remote work. But simultaneously, introversion independently increases productivity.
Right, probably due to a preference for deep focus in quiet environments or something.
Exactly. And second, we have number children. Having more children increases the probability of working from home for, schedule flexibility.
But it slightly decreases overall independent productivity due to at-home distractions.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone with kids can validate that.
Well, absolutely. So the people working from home were already systematically different from the office workers before they even logged on to their laptops.
Right. And to handle this, the Douai library enforces a strict four-step algorithmic framework: model, identify, estimate, and refute.
And the underlying philosophy here is what makes the architecture so robust for academic research. It forces a hard, deliberate separation between identification and estimation.
That separation is critical, right? I
Yeah.
mean, identification is fundamentally a theoretical problem. It's based on your assumptions about the world.
Yes. It essentially asks, assuming my theory of how these variables interact is true, is it even mathematically possible to isolate the causal effect?
Whereas estimation, conversely, is purely statistical. It asks, given my sample data, what is the actual numerical value of that effect, and how precise is it?
Exactly. And Douai literally will not allow you to touch the statistical estimation phase until you have formally encoded that theoretical identification.
So because we're dealing with observational data, we have to start step one by formally mapping our directed acyclic graph, our DIG.
Right. We have our treatment node working from home, pointing to our outcome node, productivity.
But introversion and the number of children are opening massive backdoor paths, right? Pointing to both the treatment and the outcome.
Yeah, they are. And we also map one strictly exogenous variable into this topology, a major subway disruption.
Oh, right, the instrument. And the arrow from this subway disruption points only to the treatment working from home. It has no edge pointing to the outcome.
None at all. It acts strictly as our instrument.
But why do we have to represent this visually before running any regressions? Why does the listener need to map this out?
Well, the software requires this causal model object because the algorithmic identification step needs the exact topology of the assumed relationships.
So you cannot just feed it a spreadsheet.
No, you have to feed it your structural assumptions so it can scan the graph and determine if the estimand can actually be isolated mathematically.
That makes total sense. So when Douai scans this specific graph, it discovers two valid identification strategies.
Right, moving into step two. The first strategy relies on selection on observables, utilizing the backdoor criterion.
So the mathematical logic dictates that if we condition on all known confounders, introversion, and the number of children, we block those backdoor paths.
Exactly. The remaining association between remote work and productivity is then equivalent to the true causal effect.
But This strategy demands a massive structural assumption, doesn't it? Unconfoundedness.
It's a huge assumption. We have to boldly claim that there are no unmeasured common causes out there.
Right. We have to assume our collected covariates capture every single factor that simultaneously influences both the choice to work from home and ultimate productivity.
And in real-world economics, you know, that is an incredibly heavy lift.
Which is precisely why Doe Y identifies the alternative route instrumental variables.
Yes, five. By utilizing the subway disruption, we bypass the need for unconfoundedness entirely. But we trade it for three different core assumptions.
Okay, lay those out for us.
First, relevance. The subway closure must powerfully compel people to work from home. Second, the exclusion restriction.
Meaning the closure can only affect an employee's productivity through this specific mechanism of forcing them into remote work.
Right. It cannot have a direct independent effect on their output. And third, in attendance. The closure must be randomly assigned relative to personal traits.
So, like, introverts and parents aren't systematically more likely to live on the disrupted subway line?
Right.
But wait, I want to challenge the empirical verification of that exclusion restriction. If I am defending my methodology in a paper, can I run a statistical test on this data set to mathematically prove the subway closure doesn't affect productivity directly?
You cannot. And this is a fundamental epistemological reality of econometrics that you really need to grasp.
So it's untestable.
Strictly untestable from the data alone, because you cannot simultaneously estimate the direct effect of the instrument and the causal effect of the treatment without another instrument.
Oh, wow. So you have to rely on economic intuition and logic to defend the exclusion restriction in your papers?
Exactly. The identification math assumes it is true based purely on the DAG you constructed.
Okay, so we've established our theoretical estimates.
Mm-hmm.
We move to step three, the estimation phase.
Right, translating theoretical causality into statistical reality. And this is where the core study guide aspect of our deep dive really shines.
We apply four distinct methods to our simulated data, starting with linear regression, which acts as our standard backdoor adjustment.
The mechanism here is just standard ordinary least squares. We regress productivity on our treatment variable while including introversion and the number of children as linear control variables.
And when we run this on the simulated data, the OLS estimator recovers an estimate of 1.0051.
Which is exceptionally close to the true ADE of 1.0.
Yeah, so if you are reporting this, you're telling the firm that holding introversion and family size constant, working from home provides essentially a one-unit bump in productivity.
Spot on. And the standard error here is 0.0614, utilizing a robust HC1 or white standard error correction.
And we apply the HC1 correction because we must anticipate heteroscedasticity in observational environments, right?
Exactly. The variance in employee productivity when working from home might differ systematically from the variance of productivity in a controlled office environment.
Right, because at home you have extreme high performers and extreme low performers based on their specific domestic setups. In the office, the variance might be much tighter.
Yeah, so the robust standard error ensures our confidence intervals remain asymptotically valid despite that non-constant variance.
Okay, so linear regression solves the problem by modeling the outcome. But here's where it gets really interesting. What if we approach the confounding from the complete opposite direction?
You mean modeling the treatment assignment?
Yeah. What if, instead of modeling productivity, we model the probability of who gets to work from home in the first place? That leads us to inverse probability weighting, or IPW.
Right. IPW shifts the focus entirely. We use a logistic regression to calculate a propensity score for each observation.
So that's the predicted probability that a specific individual works from home, conditional on their introversion and number of children.
Exactly. And the mechanics of how this adjusts the data are fascinating.
Yeah, think of weighting as artificially constructing a pseudo-population. We are trying to mimic the balance of a randomized controlled trial.
For example, take a highly introverted employee with no children. Based on our logistic model, they have a very high propensity to work from home, say 90%.
But if that specific individual actually went into the office, they are a rare observation.
Extremely rare. They defied their predicted probability.
So IPW assigns them a massive weight. It effectively says, since you are one of the few introverts who showed up to the office, you have to mathematically represent all the other introverts who stayed home.
Conversely, an introvert who stayed home receives a very small weight because they are overrepresented.
By weighting every observation by the inverse of the probability of receiving the treatment they actually received, the treatment assignment becomes statistically orthogonal to the covariates.
And when we apply the IPW method to our data, it yields an estimate of 1.0275.
Again, very close to the true 1.0.
Yes, but the standard error computation requires careful attention here. DUI applies the influence function of the Hajek stabilized estimator.
And that results in a standard error of 0.0754. That is noticeably wider than the regression standard error of 0.0614. We lost precision.
We did. And the reason is deeply tied to the information we chose to utilize. IPW entirely discards the outcome model.
Oh, right. It relies solely on the propensity scores to achieve balance.
Exactly. When you throw away the structural information about how introversion in children relate to productivity, you are inherently trading information for a different set of assumptions.
So relying purely on the treatment model introduces more variance, hence the wider standard error.
Yeah, and additionally, if you have extreme propensity scores very close to 0 or 1, the unstabilized weights can explode, introducing severe finite sample bias.
But the Hajek estimator mitigates this by stabilizing the weights, right?
It does, but the variance penalty compared to OLS definitely remains.
Which introduces the need for doubly robust estimation,
specifically
augmented IPW. Or AIPW.
What's fascinating here is that if regression models the outcome and IPW models the treatment, AIPW combines both.
It's like wearing the belt and suspenders. If your propensity score model snaps because you misspecified the logistic regression, the linear outcome model holds the estimates up.
And if the outcome model is flawed, the propensity scores maintain consistency. As long as just one of the two models is correctly specified, the estimator converges to the true causal effect.
That is amazing. And the theoretical properties of AIPW are exceptional, aren't they?
They really are. When both models are correctly specified, which they are in our controlled simulation, the estimator achieves the semi-parametric efficiency bound.
Meaning it provides the mathematically smallest possible variance for any regular asymptotically linear estimator of the AEE.
Exactly. And the numbers reflect that beautifully. The AIPW estimate is 1.0115, and the standard error shrinks back down to a highly precise 0.0623.
So we recovered the precision of OLS, but with a massive layer of statistical insurance against model misspecification.
We did. But remember, all three of those methods, OLS, IPW, and AIPW, still fundamentally rely on the unconfoundedness assumption.
Right. If there is a massive, unmeasured variable altering both remote work probability and productivity, all three estimates will be biased.
Which brings us to that terrifying threat of unmeasured confounding and method 4, instrumental variables using two-stage least squares.
Right, 2SLS. This method discards the backdoor criterion entirely. It abandons unconfoundedness and isolates only the exogenous variation provided by the subway closure.
First, we have to examine the strength of the instrument. The first stage x-statistic is 293.
And the standard empirical rule of thumb requires an F-statistic greater than 10 to avoid weak instrument bias, right?
Yeah, so an F-statistic of 293 indicates the subway closure is a tremendously strong predictor of working from home.
The 2SLS estimate lands at 0.8881. It is slightly further from 1.0 than the backdoor methods, but it completely sidesteps the naive 1.39 estimate.
It does, but the standard error is where we see the true cost of this methodology. The standard error for the IV estimate balloons to 0.3303.
Wait, that is over 5 times larger than the standard error from our linear regression. Why does this variance explode so dramatically?
Well, we have to look at the underlying mechanics of the Wald estimator and the Delta method.
Okay, walk us through that.
The Wald estimator calculates the causal effect by taking the ratio of two estimates. The reduced form effect, which is the direct impact of the instrument on the outcome, divided by the first stage effect, which is the impact of the instrument on the treatment.
Got it. And in our specific DGP, the first stage coefficient is 0.219.
Exactly. The subway closure only explains a roughly 22% increase in the probability of working from home.
Right, because many people were already working from home regardless of the subway, and some people forced to commute simply found alternative transportation.
Yeah, the instrument only shifts the behavior of a specific subset of the population, the compliers.
Oh, I see. So when you divide the reduced form coefficient by that small 0.219 fraction, you scale up the point estimate to recover the ATE.
But mathematically, you are also scaling up the sampling variance from both the first stage and the reduced form.
That's where the delta method comes in, right?
Yes. The delta method relies on a Taylor series approximation to estimate the variance of a ratio of random variables. It demonstrates how uncertainty propagates through that division.
Because dividing by a fraction exponentially inflates the resulting standard error.
Exactly. Four sacrifices a massive amount of precision. You are throwing away all the endogenous variation in the treatment and relying solely on the exogenous slice provided by the instrument. Less variation means wider confidence intervals.
Seeing standard errors range from 0.06 in regression to 0.33 in IV forces a complete reevaluation of what a standard error actually communicates epistemologically.
It really does. Think of a point estimate without a standard error, like a weather forecast without a confidence range.
Right. If I tell you it's going to be 70 degrees tomorrow, that means nothing if the confidence interval is between 69 and 71 degrees versus a confidence interval between 30 degrees and 100 degrees.
Exactly. And the crucial trap for graduate students is conflating precision with validity. Let's examine the naive difference in means estimate we started with, 1.39.
It possessed a very small standard error of 0.0716.
Meaning if we construct a 95% confidence interval around that naive estimate, the interval ranges from 1.245 to 1.526.
It is a very tight, narrow band.
But that narrow band completely fails to contain the true AEE of 1.0. It is a textbook example of being confidently wrong.
Confidently wrong. I love that phrasing. So precision without validity is entirely worthless in causal inference.
Completely worthless. The naive method was precisely estimating a confounded association, doing an excellent job of telling us the exact degree of the bias.
But the IV method, conversely, had a huge confidence interval due to the 0.33 standard error. But that wide interval actually captured the true causal effect.
Which is why you can never rely on statistical significance or narrow standard errors to prove your causal assumptions.
And because observational analysis relies heavily on these untestable structural assumptions, you must systematically stress test your chosen models before publishing.
This leads us to the final algorithmic step of the Dawai framework. Step 4, refute.
Dawai enforces computational robustness testing through automated refutations.
Yeah. The suite of refutations essentially attempts to break your model computationally to see if the statistical results behave the way the theoretical math dictates they should.
So we apply three primary tests to the models. First is the placebo treatment test.
The algorithm takes the existing data set and randomly permutes the treatment variable across the observations.
So it arbitrarily assigns worked from home or went to office, regardless of what the person actually did. By doing this, it computationally severs any actual causal link between the treatment and the outcome.
If the estimation method is sound, the newly calculated effect should collapse to zero. And in our run, the estimated effect fell to negative 0.00003.
Wow, essentially zero. This confirms the model isn't just highly sensitive to spurious statistical noise. It requires the actual structural relationship to find an effect.
Next, we run the random common cause test. The software generates a random dummy variable, injects it into the dataset, and structurally treats it as a brand new confounder.
So this tests the structural stability of the estimator. If our original unconfoundedness assumption held, adding completely irrelevant, randomly generated data should not move the needle.
And the model passed this test perfectly. The estimate remained rock solid at 1.005. The estimation strategy is not fragile to the inclusion of irrelevant covariates.
Finally, we run the data subset test. The model is computationally re-estimated on a randomly selected 80% subsample of the original data.
This ensures the estimate isn't being driven by a handful of extreme outlier observations. A robust causal estimate should hold true across random subsets of the population.
And again, it yielded a near-identical estimate of 0.99.
So, synthesizing this entire methodological review from Mendez's tutorial, the takeaways for your applied econometrics toolkit are stark.
Yeah, so what does this all mean for your econometrics toolkit? First, naive difference in means estimates will actively mislead you. They provide highly precise estimates of bias whenever confounding is present.
Second, backdoor adjustment methods, whether you use OLS regression or inverse probability weighting, are highly precise but demand strict unconfoundedness. You must observe and map everything relevant.
Third, if you're relying on observables, doubly robust methods like AIPW provide ideal statistical insurance against model misspecification while maintaining the semi-parametric efficiency bound.
And finally, instrumental variables tackle the severe threat of unmeasured confounding, but at a very steep cost to your variance.
Right, requiring massive sample sizes or incredibly strong instruments to maintain acceptable precision.
The methodology is a delicate balancing act of weighing the theoretical assumptions you are willing to defend in peer review against the statistical precision you need to achieve significant results.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this review, we want to leave you with a final academic exercise to run in your own Python environments using the DAOi library.
What happens to your IV model if you structurally break that sacred exclusion restriction?
Ooh, interesting. We assume the subway closure only impacted productivity by forcing remote work.
But imagine simulating a scenario where the subway disruption did directly impact productivity.
Like perhaps the failed commute was so chaotic it caused immense commuter stress, and that psychological stress carried over into the workday.
Right, devastating the independent productivity of the employee, regardless of whether they eventually worked from home or made it to the office.
If that direct path from the instrument to the outcome exists in the DGP, the exclusion restriction is violated, and your IV estimate is compromised.
The question is, how badly? How would your supposedly robust 2SLS estimator perform when dividing by that first stage?
The best way to understand the mathematical limits of the walled estimator is to intentionally change the DGP in the simulation, break the assumptions, and watch the estimator fail.
It forces you to confront the reality that you cannot just look at an economic indicator, observe a positive margin, and assume the math tells the whole truth.
Condon bias, unmeasured variables, and invalid instruments are the hidden mechanics governing observational data.
But by utilizing frameworks like DOI, maintaining a rigorous algorithmic commitment to separating causal identification from statistical estimation, and systematically stress testing your standard errors, well, you finally have a systematic way to map those hidden mechanics and isolate the truth.